Welcome to the Humanist Union of Madison monthly meeting, and to our listeners on WIDELP. And Dolita Chaput is going to give us our program today. Would you introduce it?
Thank you, Bob. The title of the program today is Humanists' Contemporary Challengers: Who Controls Our Public Image? And you might do some thinking about what we all have on our bookshelves. How many books do we have about humanists? What kind of public images do we get about humanists speaking about humanists? How many things do we see on the television about humanists on mainstream TV? What do we hear on the radio about humanists? And how much are we controlling our own image? Or who else controls it? I'm going to be talking more about the who else today, and I think there's another program here, and that's about how do we project our own image. Humanists seek personal fulfillment and the betterment of society without focus on a supernatural being. We value reason and the scientific method, the democratic process, and justice for all. And as an ethical cultural humanist stated, our shared task is to live decently, compassionately, and caringly in the world we inhabit. Our detractors say otherwise. Over 25 years ago, Left Behind author Tim LaHaye, I'm sure you've heard about Tim and the Left Behind series, wrote, "Most people today do not realize what humanism really is and how it is destroying our culture, families, country, and one day the entire world. Most of the evils in the world today can be traced to humanism, which has taken over our government, the United Nations, education, TV, and most of the other influential things of life." I don't recall my doing that. When I was a child, I heard similar barbs thrown at modernists, those scholars who studied the Bible in its cultural, historical, and linguistic context without consulting a higher power. And there are many other definitions of modernists, but that was the one that was being objected to. To my knowledge, that squabble remained primarily within religious and academic circles, but I was a child when I got a good dose of how horrible modernists were, because they used the scientific method and reason to approach the Bible. But in the 1980s, Tim LaHaye and his cohorts, and there were a number of them, took the biblical absolutist battle against reason another step. According to LaHaye, we must remove all humanists from public office and replace them with pro-moral political leaders. Now, that was in 1980. The word was out. People know about it. I've got a book right here that was written in the 80s called Thunder on the Right by Alan Crawford, who is a conservative, who pretty much nailed what was going on and predicted, I think, what has happened since that time. In 1981, LaHaye and others helped found the Council on National Policy. How many of you know what that is? Or those who are listening, have you heard of the Council on National Policy? It's a secretive, and it is secretive. They hold their meetings in secret. They do not publish it, their membership lists. I think they're becoming more open. But it's a far-right networking and strategy group of preachers, politicians, financiers, and others. Now, look at the threesome, the religious element, the political element, and the economic element, that to this day cannot be ignored by Republican candidates for office. That is one of any number of organizations, and there are multiple organizations, many organizations, that have similar goals, and that is basically to control public institutions. Today I will discuss current challengers to humanism and give an overview of how we got from the 1980s new right strategists to today's politically laced attacks on secular humanists, secular progressives, and secular liberals, and that's the terms that have kind of evolved. I was on the internet and I just happened to look up one person's name plus secular humanist, and I got blog after blog after blog after blog. And then I changed my search I added 2007, and most of those disappeared and the wording changed. Mm-hmm. So secular humanists was in vogue for a while. Some people use secular progressives. Secular liberals seems to be the term being used the most now. If time permits, we also may get into how we can better project our image, or how we are projecting our image, and who is speaking for us. And there's some very good people out there, including Lori Lipman Brown, who is in charge of the Secular Coalition of America and is lobbying for on our behalf. I can think of no better time to discuss absolutism versus reason than just before the Iowa Republican caucus. Some of the most vitriolic challengers of humanist ideals are key endorsers of Republican candidates. At stake in the 2008 election, as if you didn't know, masked by squabbles about family values and which candidate best passes a religious litmus test, is the transfer of enormous amounts of money and power from the public to the private sector, or, depending on who gets in power, the retrieval of some of that wealth. Tim LaHaye, who in 1980 wanted all humanists out of office, has endorsed Republican Mike Huckabee. Huckabee recently told Liberty University's ultra-right-wing student body that divine intervention is behind his presidential campaign. His talk netted him the endorsement of Jerry Falwell Jr. As some of you know, Liberty University was founded by Jerry Falwell, the father who has since passed away. Jerry Falwell Jr. is now Liberty University's chancellor. In fact, Falwell Jr. endorsed Huckabee via an email message on Liberty University letterhead, which resulted in Americans United filing a complaint with the Federal Tax Agency. Huckabee's website has this to say about religion. The First Amendment requires that expressions of faith be neither prohibited nor preferred. We should not banish religion from this public square, but should guarantee access to all voices and views. I found this very interesting. We should share and debate our faith, but never seek to impose it. When discussing faith in politics, we should honor the candidate. I have much more respect for an honest atheist than a disingenuous believer. Now, that's out of Huckabee's mouth. But a more revealing statement, I think, comes from karate champ and TV star Chuck Norris. How many of you have seen Norris on television? He's kind of a rugged John Wayne type, and I think he will certainly appeal to John Wayne and Reagan lovers. Not bad looking, depends on your point of view. Anyway, he's a respected, says about Huckabee, Huckabee is a respected and fearless leader, and he does not cower to the cries of any majority or minority. He doesn't abandon his values for what's expedient. Like our founding fathers, he's not afraid to stand up for a creator and against secularist beliefs. So here we've got Huckabee saying one thing about himself, and Norris, who's stumping for him, say something else. I watched several of Norris Huckabee videos, and they appear to be targeting an electorate that just wants a few smiles and some platitudes and a handsome face. They certainly weren't in depth, but I think they're getting better at it, so I don't know what's going to come now during the caucus period. Huckabee's theology school classmate, Rick Scarborough, is also stumping for him this week. Scarborough, a former revivalist and mentee of Jerry Falwell, has joined forces with a group called Redeem the Vote, and they began a 10-day tour December 6th to mobilize thousands of values voters all over Iowa. Their bus is especially designed for rallies, complete with a rollout stage, loudspeakers, spotlights, and satellites on the roof to connect with worldwide media. Well, that's nothing unusual, I think, in a presidential campaign. How I suspect that a lot of this media is going to be targeted to the evangelical vote and maybe depending on whether or not they're using Christian broadcasting or other broadcasting, probably be beamed right into churches, but I don't know what their process is. Scarborough is fighting what he claims in other writing to be an all-out war against the Christian faith, waged by the ACLU and American United for Separation of Church and State. Scarborough wrote a book in 2006 titled Liberalism Kills Kids. Did you know that? A groundbreaking work which, and this is what he says about his book, a groundbreaking work which documents the devastating failure of America's 40-year experiment with liberal statism. And then he gets into the very typical values issues, some of them which were proposed deliberately in the 1980s to fire up the voting right. And those in particular in the 80s were the gay issue and abortion. Here he says, from the deaths of 44 million unborn children to skyrocketing rates of out-of-wedlock births, to the divorce epidemic, to the destructive demands of the movement to normalize homosexuality, the book exposes a cultural coup d'etat that has left our families gasping for air. So folks like us, I guess, are responsible for all of that. Fox News is reportedly covering the Redeem the Vote tour. I haven't actually watched that much to find out, but it was Fox News commentator Bill O'Reilly who stated, "Now America is a divided country. We are fighting a fierce war on terror overseas and an intense culture war at home. No longer is the American way something to be proud of. It is also the product of the rise of a well-funded and well-organized secular progressive movement in America." Now, I think in this case, he may be talking about MoveOn.org and the Democratic Party. But nevertheless, it's the secular progressives, secular this, secular that, that keeps coming up. O'Reilly goes on, "The secular progressive philosophy would rattle even Superman, led by Moneyman, Soros, and Lewis, who have brought enormous internet access," which again I think is probably move on. "The secular progressives are selling the theory that the USA needs radical change, a complete overhaul." Now this is a very interesting statement coming up. He says, "Think about it. Almost every day, the secular progressive press bombards us with messages that America violates human rights, that it is bigoted against gays and other minorities, that the rich control everything and don't pay enough tax, and that the rights of women are trampled if any restrictions are placed on abortion." Well, what can I say?
Where's the negative part?
Where's the negative part of this? So Huckabee now has the support of Scarborough and Tim LaHaye, but it's going to be very, very interesting to watch the Iowa caucus because the religious right is torn. I think that Romney and Huckabee are going to come on top. They don't, except for Pat Robertson, they don't want Giuliani. I think it is probably torn between those who are more geared towards preaching and saving souls, but are still with the religious right and the political right, and those who are farther into the political right aspect of it. But it's hard to tell because these people have known each other for years, they've interacted for years, they squabbled, they fought, they have reinvented themselves, and if anybody ever tells you that the religious right is dead or dying, don't believe a word.
I should mention Chuck Norris is the celebrity head for a group that is trying to get instead of evolution,
creationism, yes.
Intelligent design.
Thank you. Romney has also got his followers, and he got a very important endorsement from political strategist Paul Weyrich. Am I saying his name right? Is Weyrich or Weyrich? I think it's Weyrich. who was, he's been on the scene a long time, and about this, he was part of the found, this kind of tripartite group in the 1980s that linked the political with the religious with the economic sectors in the new right. He was co-founder of the Moral Majority and the Heritage Foundation, an architect of the new right, a Bush administrator advisor, and on the permanent executive committee of the Arlington Committee. How many of you know about the Arlington Committee? You should. The Arlington Committee is an umbrella group that I believe is under the Family Research Council sponsorship. An umbrella group pushing the federal marriage amendment. In other words, they're it's a coalition of anti-gay organizations. Weyrich says, the real enemy is the secular humanist mindset, which seeks to destroy everything that is good in this society. Now, I look around the room at the people I'm seeing here, and this boggles me. I mean, I know you people. I know what you stand for. I know what you do. I know who I am. I know who my family is. Like LaHaye, Weyrich has been affiliated with the Center for National Policy. So this is a highly important endorsement for Romney. Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council, which if you don't know about it, you ought to go to their website and check out what they do, founded by James Dobson. And it broke off in order for him to save his skin from running a political unit when he was tax exempt. So the Family Research Council is basically the apolitical arm of Focus on the Family. There's now Focus on the Family Action, in which Dobson himself is taking political action. In any case, Tony Perkins, the president of the Family Research Council, he considers Romney acceptable, but he's, as far as I know, he's not endorsed anyone. And this is where they're really indecisive. Would be interesting, it was interesting for me to find out that the former Ohio Secretary of State, Ken Blackwell, who was involved in the voting controversy, is now on the staff of the Family Research Council, which is a powerful lobbying group in Washington, D.C.
Is that related to the hired soldiers?
No, that's Blackwater.
Yeah, this is Blackwell. We're going to get to Blackwater. Interesting, you should ask. Other ties to the Family Research Council have undermined the ideals of humanists. The Family Research Council and Focus on the Family were supported financially in part by Edgar Prince. Edgar Prince is a long-term, very wealthy man, Michigan, long-term member of the Council on National Policy. He's the father of Eric Prince, who runs Blackwater. Eric Prince had a college internship at the Family Research Council and also interned with George H.W. Bush. Blackwater's senior vice president, Cofer Black, who's a former State Department and CIA counterterrorist official, is Romney's senior advisor on counterterrorism. Black's advice probably led to Romney's statement that waterboarding is not torture. In any case, Eric Prince, the founder and owner of Blackwater, is also a friend of Charles Colson of Watergate fame, and who has the Colson Prison Ministry. So Eric Prince, founder of Blackwater, has helped to fund Colson's prison ministries. So, you know, he's a bona fide right winger. You go to the website, and I think he's worded it very well. I haven't read the whole thing, so I may have missed something, but I think he's tried to eliminate anything that might give the appearance of that, of his connections. But there's no question but what he's in the camp of the religious right. Colson once spoke of the need to champion the biblical worldview of God's creating and redeeming work against the growing postmodernist view of militantly secular naturalism. So, you know, if I guess if it looks like a duck.
Yeah.
With regard to Eric Prince. Bob Jones III of Bob Jones University has also has endorsed Romney. The day after the election, George Bush's election, Bob Jones III sent a congratulatory letter to George W. Bush. And he said, "In your election, God has graciously granted America, though she doesn't deserve it, a reprieve from the agenda of paganism." The Richard Land, who is the president of the Southern Baptist Convention, also praised Romney's speech on religion. And as one source put it, gave Romney a positive non-endorsement. So we've got some of these people, they're holding back. They apparently don't know what to do, but it looks like for them, Romney may be the best bet. And this is just a small section, a small portion of some of the people who are basically blasting humanism. Humanists have been countering such attacks for decades, and I want to give you a few of the things that humanists themselves have said. In 1980, humanist Nick Schuller Jr. wrote, "Clearly, the constant assaults on humanism are not going to stop if we just ignore them. The new right must be met in serious combat. To fail to do this is to surrender to them unconditionally." I think we should have listened a little harder to people like Schuller. I have with me a book whom some of you may know about, Pardon for All of the, Francis Schaeffer's book titled A Christian Manifesto. Have you ever heard of it? This was written in 1981. It was an attack on humanism, and it's as much in vogue today as it was when it was published. This is paperback came out in 2005, and on the back are statements by Marvin Alasky, who helped influence Bush to create the faith-based initiative, which transferred millions of dollars of public funds into the religious operated institutions. In A Christian Manifesto, which is basically a whole book blasting humanism, Schaeffer writes that humanism, with its lack of any final base for values or law, always leads to chaos. It then naturally leads to some form of authoritarianism to control the chaos. Having produced the sickness, human gives more of the same kind of medicine for a cure. With its mistaken concept of final reality, rather than supernaturalism or belief in an afterlife, it has no intrinsic reason to be interested in the individual, the human being. Does that sound like any humanist you know? I mean, that's the purpose of humanism, is concern for humanity. Its natural interest is the two collectives, the state and the society. Schaeffer was a follower of Scottish reformists Knox and Reformationists Knox and Rutherford, and he was also influenced in the 1980s by American Calvinist Reconstructionists. They have kind of been pushed to the side because some of them got a little violent in their rhetoric and actually violent, and so the far right, the religious right, kind of didn't want to be associated with them. But a lot of the rhetoric of today's religious right leaders includes the same demonization of secularists and desire for biblical law as expressed by Francis Schaeffer and Tim LaHaye, who you've heard about already. And this wonderful, the person who wrote this fantastic book that has been holding up my presentation, Russus John Rush Dooney. And this is kind of the Calvinist, American Calvinist Bible, called Institutes of Biblical Law. And you're welcome to look at it afterwards, but I need it right now. It's a tome, which of course is a much more difficult to read than Schaeffer's Christian manifesto, which is probably why it's not in the hands of a whole lot of people. I can't claim to have read the whole thing. And Schaefer also wrote this book, in which I find the title especially interesting. I'll pass it around. Escape from Reason. Here's from another humanist. In 1981, when these books were just beginning to come out, humanist Maxine Negri, who at that time, or at some point in time, served as chair of the American Humanist Association Commission for the Defense of Humanism, wrote, "If we try to ignore the attacks of the moral majority and the new right, we may be plowed under. We may not be able to match their dollars, but we can try to match their persistence and determination. Toward this end, every humanist and every friend of humanism needs to be willing to participate. Now is the time to stand up and be counted." That was in 1981. In 1982, the International Humanist and Ethical Union also sounded the alarm. At its 8th World Congress in Hanover, the union issued a statement on the growth of anti-humanist trends, saying, "In particular, we are concerned with the unfair attacks on humanism by various dogmatic, ideological, and fundamentalist forces. These unfortunate developments mark a retreat from reason. They signify the growth of intolerant attitudes, the intensification of sectarian hatred, and an escape from the ideals of freedom and democracy. They represent an abandonment of many of the most important positive developments in the modern world and can lead either to fanaticism among their disciples or nihilism and alienation among others." They go on to say, "A retreat to ancient religious dogma or to simple ideologies of salvation will not solve the various problems facing mankind." Maxine mentions the moral majority headed by Jerry Falwell. And as I said before, the moral majority was the religious wing of this three-part group. Roots of their strategies lie in the John Birch Society, and as I said before, Calvinist-based Christian Reconstruction. And I won't do it today, but the roots to the John Birch Society are traceable and evident. In ethical culture leader Eric Erickson's 1988 book, so we're still battling here, he says, the book is titled The Humanist Way, an Introduction to Ethical Humanist Religion, which is, some of the writers have recommended as giving to people who want to know more about humanist thought.
But they're calling it a religion.
And this is a point I'm going to get to. That's a very interesting point, Meggie, and it has political impact, the fact that they are calling it religion. And I do believe that the Ethical Culture Society is designated as a religion, am I right?
Yeah, it's a non-theistic religion.
Non-theistic religion. Erickson writes, "Prior to the fundamentalists' discovery of humanism as a convenient bugbear for their attacks on secular science and culture, the term secular humanism was only rarely used in humanist circles. As a review of the literature of the period will show, it says, in American thought, the time-honored and also preferred philosophical label that has enjoyed acceptance by both religious and non-religious humanists is the designation naturalistic humanism, a terminology that denotes a conception of the natural universe free from supernaturalism." Accompanying the 1980s religious attack on humanism was this, the huge change in politicizing religious activism. The three right-wing sectors joined efforts clearly to take control of our country's democratic institutions. And Bill Moyers explained it very clearly. He said, "The corporate, political, and religious right converged in a movement that for a long time only they understood, because they are its advocates, its architects, and its beneficiaries. Some people outside the movement did understand." I disagree with them, and I have probably about 30 books at home to prove it. But They weren't listened to, they weren't taken seriously. They were by some people, but it just didn't hit people what was really going on. The strategies are evident today, and as Moyers pointed out, the economic strategy was to relieve investors of any responsibility for the cost of society. In fact, the most wealthy in our country are now feeding fairly well at the public trough. The political strategy was to create a propaganda machine, finance it by those who stand to benefit from the transfer of public resources to elite control, and strip the government of its capacity to do little more than wage war and reward privilege. The religious strategy, according to Moyers, was to fuse ideology and theology into a worldview freed of the impurities of compromise, claim for America the status of God's favored among nations, and therefore beyond political critique or challenge, and demonize their opponents as ungodly and immoral. The foot soldiers for this are primarily evangelical preachers and parishioners in churches throughout the nation, and in churches that we don't see much, and really don't know what's being said. Through powerful Christian media networks and the internet, humanists are being defined by those that Michelle Goldberg calls Christian nationalists. And I want to hold up her book. If there's any book that I think people should read now to get the history of this and what's going on right now in the country, I recommend Kingdom Coming, The Rise of Christian Nationalism by Michelle Goldberg. She spent a year going around to rallies, visiting churches, talking to some of the figures involved in the overall movement and in specific movements, and she has really done her homework. It's very, very well documented. And so The Rise of Christian Nationalism, Kingdom Coming, by Michelle Goldberg. Two other books that I think are among many that are coming out right now. I've read both of these, Barry Lynn's Piety and Politics and Chris Hedges' American Fascists. These are documented to some extent, but nothing compared to Goldberg's book. However, they get very well into the issues and some of the players involved and how the issues are being used to stir up fear and anger. And Hedges is very interesting. Hedges is coming from a very emotional point of view. He was imprisoned by, I believe, the former Yugoslavia? I may be wrong, but imprisoned by a fascist government or an authoritarian government.
Was he a reporter? That name sounds awful.
Yes,
and he wrote that wonderful
book. He's a journalist.
He wrote that wonderful book, War is the Concept That Gives Us Meaning. It's a small book and it's brilliant.
Yeah, I really do recommend these. They're a nice complement to Goldberg. And Goldberg and Hedges know each other and have a lot of respect for each other. And she has good things to say about Hedges' book. He says he has said things that she kind of held back on. I mean, he really lets loose. And people have compared the two and criticized him for not being as documented as her, but he does lay it on the line. So those are just three that are out there among many. Barry Lynn, in this book, Piety on Politics, writes about the stolen legacy myth. And it says, a stolen legacy myth perpetuates the notion that usurpers have suppressed a nation's history and achievements of its founders in order to maintain power. That's all over the religious right, we are the bad guys and that we got it wrong. We got the history of the nation wrong. Lynn refers to right-wing Christians who, as mentioned above, claim the United States was intentionally founded as a Christian nation. This is being taught in all of the Christian homeschools. The textbooks are basically rewriting history in terms of grabbing for pieces of mention of God, or and not taking a good hard look at the deists who actually were very much a part of the established, and the theists who did not want church and state intermingled. According to this, what Barry Lynn talks about is the stolen legacy myth. The Christian nation was usurped by the far left and by radical secularists and secular humanists and anti-Christians and similar groups who seek to eradicate Christianity and its positive influences on society. I don't have anyone around here that wants to eradicate religion from the country. I mean,
they seem to be afraid of this kind of thinking.
Well, I think they're using this kind of thinking to create scapegoating. Yeah. Those seeking to privatize and Christianize our nation are defining humanism as a religion to be purged from public institutions. There was a student at the University of Virginia that created a website with various things said about this very thing, and I got some of this next comes from that. Secular humanism first became a Supreme Court topic when a non-theist was appointed by the governor of Maryland to the office of notary public. He was refused his commission because he would not declare his belief in the existence of God as required by the Maryland state constitution. And some of you may remember that. I don't know the year. Actually, it says here, 1961. The United States Supreme Court ruled in his favor, citing, and this is a very important statement that they made because it's impacted us ever since, among religions in this country which do not teach what would generally be considered a belief in the existence of God are Buddhism, Taoism, ethical culture, secular humanism, and others. And the Christian fundamentalists grabbed that, as they did our, like people mentioning that they, the ethical culture religion, or the humanist religion. They grab that wording and that decisions as one of the reasons they reject humanists claim that some humanists claim that humanism is not a religion. Now, this is interesting. They also point out, and I think this student was probably reading from Tim LaHaye, they also point out that humanism has scriptures. Did you know that? The two, at that time, the two humanist and now the three humanist manifestos are our scriptures. We have dogma, we have an object of worship, which they say is mankind itself, or humankind, a priesthood, missionaries, seminaries, temples. Guess what our temples are? The public schools. This is what's being said, or it has been said. Our temples are the public schools, and we have it's our own support base. What else is being said is that since many government-sponsored institutions require a secular basis so as to not embrace any particular religion, okay, this is their strategy. Fundamentalists accuse secular humanists as the pervading religion in public institutions. So this is the tack, one of the tacks they're taking. We are a religion, and public institutions are our, basically, our temples. According to Tim LaHaye, as the basis for political liberalism will turn the United States into a modern-day Sodom and Gomorrah. If liberals gain control of the country, they will remove religious broadcasting from the major networks and make it impossible for the conservative movement to use bulk mail to educate members and raise money. The Supreme Court also ruled that a Louisiana Creationism Act was unconstitutional because the court did not see the bill as having a genuine secular purpose. However, as some of those who wrote the minority opinion pointed out, and here again is this strategy, since the Supreme Court has also stated that secular humanism is a religion, then censoring creationism is a violation of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. Reconstructionist Gary DeMar, who has been around a long time and has his own website today, goes beyond calling secularism a religion. He declares secularism is theocratic. And he talks about a fifth grade teacher in California who was prohibited by school authorities from giving students documents on American history that mention God. That I would certainly consider going overboard on the mm-hmm. part of the school, but I don't know exactly what happened in this case. But DeMar says, here we see religion, the secular religion of humanism, being forced down the throats of captive students. And I just have a few things left here in closing, and I'd like you to get into some discussion. The challengers I've mentioned here today are connected to vast media empires with hundreds of radio and TV outlets, very slick websites, and I might hand out a list sometime of those websites so you can start getting into them, videos and publications. It seems to me that among the estimated 30 million non-theists in the United States, and Littman uses that, Mel Littman of the American Humanist Association uses that figure. He says, there is considerable opportunity for humanists and like-minded people to join forces and define themselves in a positive way. I'm certainly pleased that Lori Lipman Brown is representing us on a national basis. And I'm impressed by the human writers and humanist writers and bloggers that are out there giving us voice. And also connecting with the public via informative websites, and I think Bob Park deserves a lot of credit for setting our website and an unbelievable amount of links on that site. I applaud the congressman who acknowledged his non-theism in public. That was, I think, a very major step.
Is that Pete Stark?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I suppose most of the people that are listening today who are humanists are taking some way to positively portray our image. What we're lacking, I think, are strong daily voices and actual images in mainstream media. And I think some of us have just really recently heard about the power of images and the images in the media. So we need to be seen. I think that the best way to project ourselves is just simply by individually projecting our own compassion, our own joy, and our own understanding of the reasonableness of humanism, or whatever we call ourselves, which may vary in this group. So that pretty much concludes my presentation, and I think we've got time to open it up for discussion.
Would you pass the books around? Because
I sure will.
The titles down, but I didn't get it all.
I think you can see how beat down we are where we allow these things to pass, where a politician will say, well, we welcome people of all faiths.
Yeah.
And nobody says, how about people without any faith?
Yeah.
We're just not even included. And where you can take a guy like Huckabee, who compares the most noble atheist he can think of, and he would rather have than the sleaziest of evangelicals. Well, thanks a lot. That's what he did. That's just what he did. You know, he said, I'd rather have a such and such and such.
You know, Dolita, were you done?
Oh.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, okay. What went through my mind constantly is how this parallels the very important time in world history, the Enlightenment. The 18th century Enlightenment, they went through basically the same kind of attacks and debates, except that they didn't have the media that we have now. And I think it's really too bad that this relationship, which is those Americans who learn history or study history, know how important the Enlightenment was for the history of ideas, that this connection between humanism and the great period with the great Enlightenment thinkers, that this is not put out more, you know, in writing and in the public discourse, you know. People like Diderot in France, or Lessing in Germany, and the people in English, I can't think of the name in English now, or people like Thomas Paine, one of my heroes. But the Enlightenment has shaped so much of modern thought and all the positive thought, you know, and nobody makes this connection anymore.
But the religious right does. I mean, they blast the Enlightenment. They blast.
They do?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Oh,
it's
I
in
didn't
their
mention
writing.
That today. So I said,
yeah, I should have.
So the 18th century Enlightenment?
Yeah.
What do they say about all these great minds? I mean,
not much.
So it shows the total ignorance, too.
Yeah. On a related topic, I've been reading The Infidel, you know, by this. Muslim woman who. Got Parliament, someone that has a fatwa and wife and all that. But what she says in her book is that the Islamic religions have not yet gone through the Enlightenment.
That's true.
That the Christian religion, but that's what she's lobbying for.
Yeah.
She's trying very hard.
If she can stay alive.
Convince the strategic mass, I think, of Muslims to go through, be courageous enough to begin to go through the Enlightenment of the Christian religion. But a corollary of that is that what we're seeing now, is what's happening in the Middle East and Americans' involvement in Iraq and so on. And the 9/11, the attacks, is now a kind of a world struggle between these two huge religions, the Christians and the Muslims, with the extremists among the religions, among the Islamics, being extremely fundamentalist because the religion has never gone through the Enlightenment. And so they can quote all their religious texts as saying they must kill the infidels. All the infidels must be killed. It says so in so many words, in many places in the Quran and other religious texts.
I'd like to
Although if you go back to the 13th century in Spain, it was very enlightened, and there's a lot of tolerance between Muslim, Christians, and Jews, and intellectual freedom.
Maybe she's wrong. Maybe she's...
That's a long time ago.
She's not that knowledgeable about history and academic subjects. What I would like to know, we don't have any younger teachers. Are you a teacher?
No.
Christina?
No.
We need Eileen here for a curriculum. I'd like to know whether periods such as the European Enlightenment are taught in high school these days. I mean, it should be part of general education, really, because it's infants that I don't know. Do any of you know?
Yeah, well, I've got two kids that just recently graduated from high school.
Oh, yeah.
And neither one of my children are too interested in history.
Yeah,
I think that's a common problem with high schoolers.
Oh, yeah.
I'm very interested in history, and I hope as they age and mature, they'll get more interested in what's happened in the past. But, you made an interesting point about voices, daily voices, and you saw some great blogs. That's how the next generation gets information.
Mm-hmm.
And I worry about that. Mm-hmm. Because credibility is not a factor for putting information on the internet.
Right.
I watch my children, who are now 21 and 19, and they have the radio going, and they're on the internet, and they're talking on their cell phones, they're typing.
Yep.
I mean, it's multitasking.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I could remember this person's name, but she gave a talk at the company that I work for entitled "Multitasking Makes You Stupid."
That's true.
And I think that focus and attention and the types of questions groups like these bring up to discuss is lacking in our society.
Multitasking is
bombardment.
Yes, and you have to be able to discriminate. And you have to know what the source is behind.
Another thing,
in library school, it was considered the sources. That was very
and this is one of the things I had to be very careful of. Some of this came from books. Some of it came from the internet, and I had to be very, very careful of where the sources came from on the internet. Religious right and I Huckabee. It was very interesting that Huckabee supporters, and I can't say that his campaign did it, but certainly Huckabee supporters. At one point in time, and I suspect it was about a year ago or so, I really had a blog storm on the internet because I searched on Huckabee and humanism. I think it was Mark Huckabee in quotes plus humanism. Mm-hmm. And I just got pages and pages and pages and pages of blogs about secular humanists, awful secular humanists, you know, and it was scripted. I mean, not exactly scripted, but it was as if he said, be sure you include this, this, and this. And it showed up on the topic of the blog and the you know, the little bit that you see before you go into the page. And it was just as if, who knows how many hundreds of people had been told, you know, go make a blog, and this is what you put on it. And pages of it.
Yes, I subscribe to the Progressive Populist. There's in the current issue, there is a long article on Huckabee by a journalist from Arkansas who says he is not all he appears to be. Mm-hmm. He was governor of Arkansas. Yeah. And during that time, there were a lot of things that were not compatible with all the lovely, precious things he says, mm-hmm. a lot involving money and the misuse of
funds.
To lead out a question, you mentioned that humanism doesn't get a lot of press. We're not kind of out there in the media. Uh-huh. Our message is not being expressed. But the Freedom from Religion Foundation is. They're getting
a lot of
press. And I'm just wondering, how closely are we humanists connected with the Freedom from Religion Foundation? Because I think sometimes, well, it's just my impression, they maybe go a little bit too far. I wonder what comment you would have on our relationship between...
Dan Barker was here to speak to this.
Oh, sure, he's spoken.
Oh, he was? Yeah. I think that, I'll give you my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think they've done some wonderful, wonderful work. I think that they have matured. In a way, I think that the part that I object to is ridicule. And I don't think we get anywhere with ridicule.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Dan Barker in his songs, there's a lot of that there. Yeah. And the last time I heard him was probably 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I laughed.
I thought
it was funny.
We got to see him.
But we were in the Unitarian group up at Stevens Point, and there were some people there that... we're quite offended, and we're certainly not fundamentalist religion.
Well, you know, if we really are, if our intent is to present ourselves in such a way that people who disagree with us can still respect us, mm-hmm. then you don't start by bopping them on the head. Mm-hmm. And I can do that too. I mean, I can vent, and I can. But I think it's totally counterproductive to
it is.
And I feel this way about Air America.
But his song that he sang, and I hope you have that on tape because I'm dying to get the melody, I think is brilliant.
Oh, the Hollinear song?
The one, yeah. I ain't afraid of your Jesus.
But I'm afraid of what you do in the name of your God.
Yeah, that's a wonderful. Oh, you do?
Yes. But on the other hand, humanists can kind of...
Wonderful.
Do
you want to borrow one?
Yes, I
can take. Are you going to be there Sunday? Wednesday to those book group.
Yeah, Susan, why don't you go ahead?
On the other hand, atheists and both humanists can, be bent over backwards. I got more than a little offended this week. The movie The Golden Compass, based on the book by the atheist Philip Pullman, came out this week. And there was this huge press on the State Journal about a school trip going to the Golden Compass and some people not going because they've heard the book was
written by an atheist, and they're afraid their kids will be polluted or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't actually write anything to the paper. I should have, but I mean, it just struck me as.
But they were positive.
We agnostics, atheists, that sort of things, are supposed to just sit there and take all this religious stuff.
No, I don't think we are.
No.
No.
Sometimes it just feels like that, and then the minute anything that mildly critiques religion. It's about time religion started being able to be critiqued, basically.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think the charge of secular humanism being a religion is a hard one to refute. Mm-hmm. Because I know when this guy from Minnesota, Keith Ellison, I think his name is, he's a Muslim, he's a black Muslim, mm-hmm. and when he was sworn in, he wanted to take his oath on the Quran, and they objected to that, and I would have forced him to do that.
That's
his right. That means something to him.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, suppose the incredible thing happened, I got elected to something. And I had to put my hand on something. What would it be? And I thought, well, it would be the Humanist Manifesto.
Yeah.
Because it's something that means something to me.
Yeah.
And I would take it seriously. But that kind of puts it into religion, and then it becomes just a narrow defining of terms. What's a religion and what isn't?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To say that the humanist religion is using the public schools as their temple, and that everything that's been taught in the public schools that isn't taught under the supervision of a religious group is humanist religion is way out of line.
Yeah,
what we hope is taught in the public schools is knowledge that has been gained through the scientific process, through reason, through long time study of how people learn, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which I think is religiously neutral. Galen.
You're familiar with a religion called the religious humanism?
Yeah.
I reported on this in my presentation. Mm-hmm. But it has a bunch of theists that are in it. They call themselves a religious humanism. The most outstanding example I know that's really kind of says it all, I guess, is a Catholic priest who is a member of that, who is actually paid by the Vatican. He lives in Tucson, Arizona, where he's an astronomer who runs the Vatican's astronomy laboratory. They have a research lab in Tucson, and they have a telescope on top of a mountain. So that's his job, full-time job, but he actually paid by the Vatican.
Yeah.
And his official address is the Vatican. Stuff on the webpage doesn't say. Anyway, he's a very active member of the society. I don't know the full name, but it's the religious humanism.
Well, I think the focus, is on the betterment of humankind. I've never seen us go around here and say. Believer, non-believer, believer, non-believer. I mean, I don't know. Well, yeah, I probably do. But that's not just simply not what we discuss. We don't do a litmus test as to who does or does not believe in God.
I just wonder how deep the religious beliefs are among the great unwashed. And one test is what's going on in the Iowa primaries. There is incredible hypocrisy on the part of all the candidates. Mm-hmm. And if people aren't bothered by that, and I haven't seen much indication of it, it probably means they don't, if it works politically, that's okay, and we don't care what the real beliefs are.
Yeah.
I said just one more thing. You didn't say anything about the Democratic candidates.
I was having too much fun with them.
But I think they're all running scared also.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if you listen to them...
They brought out their religious...
I think it's Kucinich, maybe one other, that's come right out and said what the kinds of things we believe. Mm-hmm. Right? It's a real separation of church and state. All the others are sitting on the fence
mm-hmm. yeah.
and refusing to... to separate themselves from, you know, theism.
Is Huckabee actually going to hang tough with his belief, non-belief in evolution if he gets on the national stage? Is he actually going to keep saying that, that he doesn't believe in evolution?
Probably.
Well, I think, isn't it true that a majority of Americans would go along?
I don't know.
Well, I'm sure he knows. Kind of scary.
I don't know.
It's a little like the guy saying, yes, I believe everything in the Bible.
Same guy?
Yeah.
Flat Earth Society.
On the other hand, you know, I'm always a little opposed to Dolita in terms of the seriousness of the threat. Gail Collins, I think it was Gail Collins in the New York Times yesterday, pointed out that in the Iowa primary, there might be 35,000 of these far-right evangelicals who hold the balance of the vote. And she says, well, there are 35,000 people on my block in New York City. So, you know, there's not many people.
No. Who's going to vote? And this is the one thing you're pretty slick at.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. When you think of the percentage of people who actually vote, I had a paragraph about it, which I skipped because I was running out of time, but the percentage of people that actually vote, these people get their folks out to vote.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They vote.
They get buses and they vote.
And anytime, you know, I think we all need to be reminded about the current makeup of our Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
If at any time you don't take these guys seriously, just think about the makeup of the Supreme Court, the makeup of the regime we've had for the last umpteen years, and I don't think we even begin to know the depth at which it's gone down into the government in terms of appointments.
Dulia, it's my turn now. Dulia, you just mentioned one thing. You said that we humanists believe in the betterment of mankind, which is precisely what the new idea and the Enlightenment idea was, the perfectibility of mankind. And this is what our constitution is based on.
Yeah.
And if we, those of us who write and so forth, would get more of this connection into the public discourse,
yes,
and into the media, even as an argumentation point, it would help, I think, you know, to show that the Enlightenment, the constitution, and humanism really are one sequence that belongs together as the foundation of the
I can't agree with you more. I think we get stuck up too much on whether you believe in God or not.
Yeah,
exactly. That's not the point. That's not the point.
For a better life.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's about bettering your life.
That's right.
Now and the life, mm-hmm, of other people.
Becoming better human beings.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I, for one, am a little concerned. Although I couldn't have been more impressed with Lori Lipman Brown when she was here. What a fantastic,
yes,
person. How articulate. I was just blown away by the leadership that she brings, but it really concerns me that they have Christopher Hitchens on their board now. He is so pugnacious, and he is, as far as I'm concerned, he's not a humanist. And to have, to your point, who are our daily voices? Who are the people that are pulling people together for the betterment of humankind? I don't think it's Christopher Hitchens.
I think that's worth a whole session.
Yeah.
Is who? How do we represent ourselves? Who represents,
yeah,
us? What can we do
to encourage them?
Right. Encourage them.
He's the author of The God Delusion, and he's going to be speaking in Madison in March as part of the Distinguished Lecture Series.
Really?
So that may be a good time to have a program on him and his influence.
Who is better than you, more the author? Session at the Freedom from Religion Foundation.
Do you know the philosopher Alexander?
Wait a minute, I'm sorry, I'm confusing him with Dawkins.
Yeah.
No, I don't. Dawkins
is
nasty too.
Which
is
Dawkins?
Which are Dawkins?
He's in the world, the God. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
He's the one who's coming.
He can be very nasty too.
Yeah, he's
racist.
I don't know who Alexander Pope is.
But
there's a little thing that he said that reminded me pretty good. He said, man should not presume the Almighty to scan. The proper study of mankind is man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we used to have a Blunker Unitarian group that had that on there.
Yeah.
We need to wind up. I was going to mention before we close that Chris Hedges spoke in Madison recently as part of the library's Faith and Reason series. And there's a recording of that available on the Wider Horizons website, which is the scheduling page for the WIDELP 10 to 11 o'clock hour. So let's thank Dulita for her presentation.